So, Jeff, I'll just take about half an hour, and then the rest will be yours. Okay? We selected that reading deliberately because you'll notice that the what the Apostle Paul was doing in Corinth was teaching. It was the essential mission of the Apostle Paul. And things are changing within our outreach and the way we we preach. And what we're seeing now are various organizations vying for the community's dollar in order to extend their programs. And what I'm presenting tonight is along the lines of the traditional mission outreach that we have been performing in Central America since the late 50s. And you're all, I'm sure, aware of the emphasis now by some organizations within our community. One has the slogan, doing good deeds in the name of Jesus. And their policy is that preaching will be is a back door, and this is literally their description, a back door approach. And I'm just mentioning this, I just want to bring you up to date a little bit on where things are at as far as our outreach as a community. And I'm not really trying to criticize as much as inform on what's happening. And then I'll get to some of the areas that I've already covered at various times with you before. But essentially, I don't think, for those who haven't been involved in mission work, it's very difficult to understand what mission work is really about. And I know this by the kinds of questions that I keep getting. I keep getting the same questions over and over again, which tells me that the concept of what we are doing is not well understood by the majority of brothers and sisters in North America. And so Jeff and I are just going to try and give more information tonight, particularly on what's happening in Central America. The reason we do what we do, and the reason that I'm going to speak for myself, the reason that I do what I do is very deliberate. You might be surprised to know that when I go to Central America, I do not preach. And just about every time I go, well, how's the preaching going? Well, I don't preach. You'll see there in what Paul said to the Corinthians, or what is written there in the Acts, that Paul went into Corinth, and his deliberate agenda was to teach. And this is what we do what I do in Central America. My mission is particularly a teaching pastoral mission. And I believe that if we teach and build up the brothers and sisters and the young people, they will teach, they will preach. And this is exactly what's happening. The outreach work for Costa Rica, for which I am link man, is being done continually, day by day, through the brothers and sisters in that ecclesia. Now, I'm there for 1 week a year, and so I consider my role as a preacher it would be very ineffective in preaching. But I consider that I can at least contribute in encouraging and exhorting and building up the brothers and sisters and the young people. I'm going to be perfectly frank with you that I'm not in favor of the backdoor preaching approach. I don't believe that doing good deeds in the name of Jesus really is where we can be effective. And I'll tell you why. If you put in a well for a community, which is the kind of things that these people do, put in wells and generating systems and so on, what you do is you bring in expertise from another country, from North America. And I'd be fully capable of that, of doing some of these kind of things. I've actually worked in Panama for 4 years as a foreign technician, and I was there to advise on maintenance procedures for diesel generators. Going into a remote village in a third world country and putting in a generating system is great while the foreign technician is there to see that the maintenance gets done. And that the parts are ordered in a timely fashion. For example, when I was in Panama, I had to be sure that spare parts were ordered 12 months in advance. So I had to anticipate the needs of those generators 1 year down the road, because that's how long it took for the paperwork to get done within the organization for whom I worked, for the order to be placed to the United States, for the order to be shipped into Panama, to be received, to be processed, and then to get to be put on the shelf. It took 12 months, precisely. And so we couldn't wait for breakdowns to occur before we ordered. So going back to the generator in the remote village, who is going to be there when the foreign technician goes home to make sure that there are parts on the shelf, that there is an inventory to keep that equipment running for the rest of the time that that generator is going to sustain energy for that village? When it breaks, we're back to where we were before. Putting in wells in Africa, it sounds great. The pictures look good. It certainly works for getting funds out of the community. But what happens when the pump breaks? Where is the foreign technician to make sure that that pump gets fixed and the water continues to flow? It won't be long before the villagers are out with their bucket walking to the central tap in the village to get their water again. And so, having seen that, I'm not overly impressed with that form of preaching, thinking that these people say, well, oh, these Christadelphians are pretty neat folks, they put in wells, we'll see what they're about. What I do know is this, that the ecclesias of brothers and sisters in Central America have improved their lifestyles incredibly. I was going to use the word unbelievably, but it is believable, because we know it's the power of the gospel. And when you give the gospel to people, their lives automatically improve. It takes them out of the normal and puts them into a different level, and therefore they become, by default, they automatically get on a different standard of living. I'm going to show you pictures of brothers who were alcoholics. They're no longer alcoholics. They're leaders in an ecclesia, because they've been transformed by the gospel. And so that curse of alcoholism that was in their families and would have penetrated on down through their children and perhaps even onto their grandchildren has been stopped in its tracks by the gospel. And so this, I think, is the most powerful thing that we can do for these people. The well will quit because the pump will stop, but the gospel goes on. And once brothers and sisters get the grip of the gospel and they get a fervent love for it, they will pass it on. And I think this is the real mission that we should undertake. So just to go back over my last trip to Costa Rica, Panama, and Guadalajara, this is a trip I will repeat, God willing, in December. Again, going to these three countries. Why these three countries? Well, I'm a link man for Costa Rica to begin with. I have a vested interest in Panama. Beth and I spent over 4 years in Panama. I work for the electric utility there, as I said before, as a foreign technician. Guadalajara is a more recent thing for me. I've been involved in Guadalajara now for the past 5-6 years, and because I've been connected there, I feel an ongoing obligation and a desire to go back and to continue my contact with the brothers and sisters there. So here we are. Here's the work of the mission in Central America. You will see where we have ecclesias situated. Guadalajara, well to the north of Central America. Mexico is actually considered to be part of North America. But you'll see that we have an ecclesia in Guatemala City. We have three ecclesias in El Salvador. We have the Sonsonate Ecclesia, the San Salvador Ecclesia being the main one, and we have this other one, Usulatan, out here a little to the south of the capital city. You'll also notice there's this ecclesia here. This, believe it or not, Merida is in Mexico, and it is the Merida and what's the other one, Jeff? Help me. Campeche. I knew you would help me out. Campeche and Merida are in the Yucatan, and this is all part of Mexico, because Mexico goes up here, And Merida and Yucatan are in the stage of development. And Brother Bill and Sister Carol Rawson from the UK, they are the main ones who are working in that area over in the Yucatan Peninsula. It's a long way from Guadalajara. As much as I'd love to get over there, it would be another week for me. It would add another week onto my trip. And that would make 4 weeks. And my wife said to me once, when are you going to do some work? So anyway, that's Mexico, Guatemala, very small ecclesia in Guatemala City. Quite a few members in El Salvador, over 100 members, I would think now, in Salvador, right, Jeff? Between the three ecclesias, and doing very nicely. These folks are very dedicated. El Salvador is known as a very hard-working people, very industrious-type people. It shows in their dedication in the ecclesias as well, the amount of work that these brothers and sisters put in to advance the work of the truth in El Salvador. Unfortunately, we really don't have anything happening in Honduras, which is here behind the San Salvador, and we don't have anything in Nicaragua. Now, Brother Frank Woodcock was active with the work in Nicaragua. He was maintaining contact with a group many years ago, back in the 80s, but he lost contact with the group in the civil war that was taking place in that country. And after the war, he couldn't locate them. He didn't know whether they had lost interest or whether they had actually been killed. So coming on down to Santa Barbara, you'll see Santa Barbara. Well, that's a town just out of San Jose. It's about a 45-minute by bus to get out to Santa Barbara. And Santa Barbara is up in the mountain region, up here in the central mountainous region. And that's where we have an ecclesia. And Panama City, as you are probably familiar by now, Panama City, two ecclesias, one in Panama City and one on the other side of the isthmus in Colón. We'll show you some pictures of both of these areas. This was the... that must be 3110, actually. You can see that I actually attended. There I was back there. But the men got green shirts. So if anyone would like a gaudy green shirt, I've actually got one hanging up in my closet. And the ladies are all in pink. That was completely their idea, by the way. And Brother Jeff Paggi was down working, doing teaching as well as myself last year. Some of the sisters. And Jeff was also there. I didn't see you in the other picture, Jeff. Yeah. You must have been there. But you can see he's got his classy green shirt on. And Jeff was teaching the young people in their gymnasium that they had down there at the facility that we were using. The young people in Costa Rica are certainly the future of that ecclesia. There's a good group and they're coming along really nicely. And the brethren down there are placing a lot of emphasis on teaching the young people. So, and I think with a lot of foresight there. And before the memorial meeting, gathering in the main hall, typical of a Bible camp, Bible school, our recent baptism, our most recent baptism in Costa Rica, Sister Victoria Arias and Brother Dennis. And just typical of what you'll see at any Bible school, people sitting around enjoying each other's company. And this man here, he's a husband of one of our sisters, and a very humorous fellow. But anyway, after the Bible camp, we went by his house. You can see Brother Dennis is in the back there chewing on a piece of sugar cane. And Carlos here is just peeling off the outside of the sugar cane ready for the next taker, which I think happened to be Jeff, but Jeff wasn't too impressed with the whole idea for some reason. And but anyway, there's Jeff with a brother, Brother Miguel. And Brother Miguel insisted that we take this trip with him up to the volcano Irasu. And we were up there, and very cold, as a matter of fact. We're very high up. You can see it's a desolate place, as volcanoes tend to be. And Brother Miguel, just for those of you who haven't heard the story, Brother Miguel was the one who was the member of the evangelical church. And there were four evangelical churches in Santa Barbara, one Catholic church, four evangelical churches, made up the church structure in the pueblo. And the laity in the church, there was a pastor, but the laity were given the responsibility of teaching some of the Bible studies. It was Brother Miguel's turn to do a Bible study, and he chose to do it on the devil. And Miguel, because he just loves the Bible, he loves to read the Bible, but he's more than just a reader, he's a student, he actually studies it and thinks a lot about it. And anyway, he came to the Bible class at the evangelical church this one night with his study on the devil. And he'd come to the conclusion that the church was placing way too much emphasis on this devil. They were giving the devil the omnipotence that was due to God. Because he said the pastor was teaching that the devil was on the front bench of the church. The devil was everywhere. The devil was here, the devil was there, he was underneath everything, he was above everything. The devil was everywhere. And Miguel said, brothers and sisters, they use that all the time down there, brothers and sisters, we are in error. Because we're replacing God with the devil. And anyway, the end of the story is that he wasn't the only one that thought this. The brother that you saw earlier at the bottom left-hand slide, bottom left-hand side there, talking to Brother Dennis before the memorial meeting, was another one in the evangelical church. In fact, he was the assistant to the pastor, and the pastor's name was Guillermo. And he said, he was the one who filled in for the pastor when the pastor wasn't able to lead the congregation. But these two men, Miguel and Francisco, they were the best of friends. They'd grown up in the village together, and they were the best of friends, and they conferred and spoke about things often. And they were in agreement, but so were some other members. And in the end, they all had to leave. Because the pastor said to them, the door you came in by is the door you can leave by. Because they were no longer welcome, because not only had they come up with the idea that the church was placing way too much emphasis on the devil, they felt that the emphasis was wrong on praise to God. They realized it was all out of balance. The praise was strictly, almost exclusively to Jesus and not to God. And when the pastor was questioned on this, he said, well, what's it matter? It's all the same anyway. And they were becoming very uncomfortable with this whole emphasis that the pastor was putting onto the church. Anyway, Miguel and the others, they did leave the church, but there was nowhere for them to go except to somebody's home. And in the meanwhile, will tell you something. The Catholic priest had got a hold of the news, and he had said to the congregation, he said, we must have nothing to do with these people because they are possessed with the devil. And so Francisco's sister was a Catholic, and she heard the priest say this to the congregation, and so she went running off to Francisco. She said, what's this I hear that you don't believe in Jesus? Because the priest had told them that these people don't believe that Jesus is God. And And so then Francisco had to assure her that, yes, they very much believed in Jesus, but he had to add, but not as God. Anyway, the story unfolds that this group, they met in the home of Brother Francisco. They really had nowhere to go. So it just happened that one of the sisters had a coupon that had been cut out of a newspaper, and she had been given this coupon by a man who lives in the village. I see him most every time I go down because he works in a very nice little fish restaurant. He's never become a brother. But he cut out this coupon figuring it would be of interest, and he gave it to this sister who's now dead. And she tucked it in the back of a Bible. When they met in front of the group of rejects from the evangelical church, met in Francisco's home, she pulled it out. She said, I wonder if this might be something. And they looked at that and said, well, this sounds interesting. And they decided to send off one of their number off to find this group. Oh, no, pardon me. They sent away, and I'll show you the booklet they sent away for at the very end of the presentation. They decided to send away for the book. And so the little booklet is just a tiny little leaflet came, and they said, oh, this looks very interesting. We've got to look this group up. And so they decided to send one off, and so Francisco went off the next Sunday to try and find this group. Couldn't find it. At least, I think he might have actually found us, but he couldn't believe that this was this group who had such a wonderful understanding. And it went back to the group and reported, no, it's just a hole in the wall. There's really nothing there. And all the neighbors say, oh, no, they're just a tiny little group. You don't want to, that can't be anybody. And they said, no, we've got to try again. The next Sunday, off he went. And he went and he found this little hole in the wall, and it was literally a little hole in the wall. And he sat on the back row listening to the exhortation that had just started by Brother Tony Bieres from South Africa. It just so happens, brothers and sisters, and this is how things work. It just so happened that Tony and Esther Bieres, the resident missionaries in Costa Rica at the time, had decided prior to this event that it was time for them to go home. There was one brother, one Costa Rican brother in that meeting at the time. That's it. That was it. The rest were missionaries. And there was Brother David Collister and Sister Leonie, and I forget her maiden name, and the two Bieres. So there were four missionaries and one local brother, and they decided, that's it, we're going to shut the shop and all go home. Until Brother Francisco walked in the door that Sunday morning, heard the exhortation. They invited him home after the exhortation. All of them, the four missionaries and Brother Francisco, and I believe the two children of the Bieres got into a Toyota Corolla and went home. I can't imagine that, but they did it. Well, actually, I can, because Tony is Portuguese by descent, and you can do anything. If you're Portuguese, Italian, so anyway, they got home, and Francisco was there for lunch, and Tony said to him, he said to the local brother, he said, well, you were an evangelical, you tell him about us. So this brother, as in the words of Brother Francisco, he got the machine gun out, and he started letting me have it. There's no devil, no immortal soul. You don't go to heaven. He gave him all the negatives. Poor Brother Francisco, he walked out of there. He was in a complete daze. He went back to the group, and as he was going out, he said, he loves to tell this story. I could get it every year if I wanted it. But he said, Sister Esther. No, it wasn't Esther, actually. It was Leonie. She was on the side, and her face, but she was just worried about what this brother was saying. And because she knew that he was just destroying him. But anyway, they kindly gave him a whole package of leaflets as he walked out the door and he went home. Got home to the group and they said, well, how was it? He said, oh, he says, I don't know. He says, they got so many things. I'm not too sure about this group. But anyway, Miguel, bless him, Francisco wasn't interested in the leaflets. So he handed them all to Miguel. He said, here, you can read these. Miguel worked as a chef in a fish and chip restaurant. Seafood restaurant, not a fish and chip, a seafood restaurant. And he was working the night shift. That night, when he finished his shift, he took the leaflets home and he read every one. He didn't sleep that night. And Francisco tells me that the next day he came into his house. Hey, Francisco! And he said he came in and he had a smile from ear to ear. And he said to Francisco, we found it. This is what we've been looking for. Now that ecclesia numbers over 50 members, 20 young people in the ecclesia, and this is an ecclesia that was formed in the mid-80s. You can see why I like to go to Costa Rica. It's an exciting place to be. All right, well, that's... this is a Bible class in Colón, and Colón is it's a very small group. They meet in a place that looks like it's been, it looks like it could have been in Libya. You know, it's a terrible place. A lot of the buildings are just skeletons, looks like they've been bombed out. But this group meets in this little hall. And air conditioned, they lock the door behind them, go in, and they meet here every Sunday and also during the week. One of the brothers seated there, when he could see there was a need for an ecclesial hall, he didn't buy the room. He bought the whole building, and he supplies this room to the ecclesia free of rent. Very generous brother. Over on the other side, Panama City Ecclesia, again a small group. This brother here in the front with the glasses on is Brother Ian Neblett, and he actually was a member of the Toronto East Ecclesia, and he married a Panamanian sister, and he has become a real strength to both ecclesias in Panama and in Colón. And there's Brother Luis and Brother Vanessa on the left-hand side. They're actually Colón members. The rest of those are from Panama City. I could tell you a little bit of a story about Vanessa. Vanessa grew up in Colón, and Colón is mostly a black city. And not a lot of white Panamanians. And you can see that most of the members in Panama are colored. You see some lighter skins now in the meeting, but the original members were black, because they were the only ones who could understand English, and all the original preaching was done in English, so it attracted black members. But anyway, Sister Vanessa, she was on the Colón side, and when I was there, she was just a teenager. And in Colón, they speak a mix of languages, and it's kind of, they mix in some Creole, and it's impossible to understand unless you grow up in that area speaking that language with them. Anyway, there was a group of teenagers in the front of the ecclesial hall, and they were carrying on this conversation. And they were laughing and carrying on, and I thought, I had a hunch they were laughing at me. And so I went up to them, and I had to say, look, guys, I said, speak to me in English or speak to me in Spanish, but what you're speaking, I just do not understand. And she still laughs about that to this day. And that's them. And this is Vanessa's daughter, Nishla. And they have now settled into Panama. Another reason I go to Panama is people like these sisters here who have maintained a faithful and consistent attendance all down through the years, even when there's been very little leadership, when there have been difficulties in the ecclesia. These are the ones who maintain the course. The sisters have been a tremendous strength in Panama. I can't say enough about my sister in Christ, Sister Joan Hines. She was the first sister baptized in Panama City, I believe, in 1968. I think she was seven. I think she might have been 17 at the time. Well, that's moving up now to Guadalajara. Guadalajara is a more European-type environment. The Bible Center, which is now has been moved, but the new one is somewhat similar, attracts people. You can see, looking out onto the street, it's like a storefront. It's open 7 days a week, and people come in for Bible readings, to take literature, to sit and have coffee, a chat. And this is typically what goes on with a study session. I've just done a study class, And now Brother Jose Luis is making a point to a visitor. This visitor is not unlike a fellow who showed up last week at the seminar and was a pain in the neck. And this fellow here has become a pain in the neck to this ecclesia, constantly airing his point of view. And Jose Luis is just about at the point of telling him, look, you really don't fit. Because he just refuses to accept the teaching. In Guadalajara City, you can see it's a very Catholic-dominated city with one huge cathedral, but that's a big open plazas, wide streets, very European, and very safe. And this is why we've had a very successful campaign down there in the summer of this year. I wasn't there, but it was Brother David Lloyd, who's link man now for Guadalajara, was there. And a team from North America was there on sort of a truth call kind of a deal. Sister Cynthia Piver has been the spark plug behind this effort ever since she moved down there with her husband, Brother Carl, some years ago now. Unfortunately, Brother Carl is no longer with us. He died. And the brother on the left is Brother Gabriel Lopez, Mexican brother. And the sister over on the right-hand side is a sister from the Yucatan. Sister Malu came over last year while I was there. And, there we are on a stroll in central Guadalajara. And again, just part of the skyline in central Guadalajara. And that's the old Centro Biblico. Now the center is moving to an area, to a location closer in to the closer again to the city center. As you can see, people walk by the sidewalk, right by on the sidewalk. They're invited in. The signs had just been, the signs weren't up at that point. But the signs invite people in to help themselves to the literature that you can see just inside the door. There's coffee. There's a table and chairs to sit and chat and do readings and so on and so forth. It's a great environment. And our most recent baptism, if you read the latest Tidings magazine, you'll see there's an article there by the latest brother who was baptized in Guadalajara. And he literally found the truth by walking past the Bible Center, and a leaflet in a gust of wind blew against him, just like that, and it stuck on his chest. This leaflet blew off the sidewalk, stuck on him. And when he looked at it, he saw all these subjects and he became interested. Now he's a brother. And he says the Bible Center is really his refuge. All right, well, it's just about time for me to step down. But there, that is the booklet that God used to bring about the ecclesia in Santa Barbara in Costa Rica. It's just, as you can see, it's a really simple, nothing fancy at all about it. I wouldn't be surprised if Brother Frank didn't do the graphics many years ago. But there it is, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And this was the subject that really caught the attention of these evangelicals in Santa Barbara and caused them to pursue the truth. Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And I think I think when you get inside it says, are they one? But anyway, I better leave it at that. And Jeff, now it's your turn. Thank you.
Sorry about that. We were going to do the second hymn after the reading, but I guess this is as good a time as any. So we're going to sing hymn 179. Thank Gordon. Oh, yeah, we changed it. Thank you. 327. Can't find this slide here. Hymn 327, come unto me, ye weary, and I will give you rest.
Oh, the timing was just about perfect there. I hope I wasn't too distracting. So this screen isn't working, so I'm hoping this one lasts for the whole time I'm going to be talking. When I stand before you tonight, I can hardly believe that I've been going down to Central America for almost 9 years now. And I know it doesn't seem like much but to some, but it seems like a lot to me. It seems like just yesterday was my first year there. And my time passes, and you get to know people. And I want to thank Gordon for agreeing to present tonight as well. And I'd like to try and help us to identify with our brothers and sisters there. That's kind of my slant on the presentation, on my part of the presentation tonight. So Gordon's done a great job. Thanks for introducing some of the countries and history that I didn't know, and well, I've heard some of it. But so let's start off. I'm going to show you kind of a collage of pictures along the way, and the first couple of ones are baptism, and just to illustrate that, you know, we've had some recent baptisms here, and it's a joyful occasion for all of us, and invigorating because we realize that people are still taking their faith to heart, the truth of the Word of God to heart, and that's what they are doing here as well, and this is what binds us, and it's important to keep that always in the forefront of our minds that we share a bond, and we're so close to these people, although they're far away, because of our faith. And it's the reason that I can go down there the first time I ever went down and come into an ecclesia and find that I'm welcomed and I feel at home, even though I'm in a foreign country. So it really does cross cultural boundaries, although there are always some curiosities along the way too. Now, I couldn't help but throw in a couple of shots of, you'll see at least one other scenery picture. That's at a beach in El Salvador. If anyone says that it's not nice there and they don't have beautiful places, yeah, look at a beach like that. That's, the sun's kind of setting and there's some beautiful boats there and the hot summer breeze is blowing. Now, these few pictures just illustrate kind of ecclesial life. This is actually at a class that I was giving, and they're kind of eager there with their Bibles, and Christian, they're not so eager. I had to wake him up, actually, before we started our class. Somehow, between when the memorial meeting ended and when the class was supposed to start, he was asleep on the bench, so required a bit of prodding. And then a couple of brothers there just discussing things afterwards. Now, this is a wedding. I don't know if you can see that in the bottom corner. I neglected to put one of the bride and the groom. So you have to imagine that there's a bride and a groom at the end there. Those two things are chairs. And actually, when they have a marriage, they actually sit in the chairs and face the person that's talking. They talk for a long time too in those weddings. They have an officiator from the government that actually has to come and by law say a whole bunch of stuff. And they usually like to talk. And that's another beautiful. See, that's just off the side of the road. And that's a volcano. A lot of volcanoes there. That one's not active, but we drove by it and it didn't go off. And families. Now, I have a little bit to say about this one. I stayed at this sister and brother's house in, well, they're married. in Costa Rica. And that's their family there, immediate family. They don't live in that house as well, but these two married later in life, and actually I think there was an article about them in the Tidings, if I recall. No, that's better, thanks, yeah, much better. And they knew each other when they were kids, but they married, and then their spouses passed away. And then later in life, they they met each other again later in life. And but they also encountered the truth around that time as well. And so they ended up getting married and also embracing the truth and being baptized together. So it's a pretty neat story of how they found the truth. All right, and that's a bit later in history. That's more recent development than... Anyway, I keep looking over at Gordon there. So, life in El Salvador. This is a little girl, Michelle. She's at this ceremony. I went and attended this ceremony for it's one of those grade school graduation things. So she was having this, and so I went along while I was there. And these four guys here, they're lined up on the table, and they had some nice things to say about education. And it was some of the more boring speeches I've ever heard. Hopefully, well, yes. No offense against them or anything, but they talked a lot about education and where it was going, and then finally the kids got to come up and get their little certificates and stuff. But actually, the kids presented afterwards, and some of the presentations that they did were just absolutely amazing, and some of the projects they did, it was much more entertaining than the four gentlemen up there. But and you could tell because as they droned on and on, the din in the room got louder and louder, and people just didn't seem to be listening to them. Poor guys. But now I guess the thing that I have to say about this is in agreement with Gordon's comment about the people there being hardworking, is they realize the value of education, and they work very hard to try and get their kids a good education, and it costs money. So they work extremely hard to try and send them to school, and. There's an older sister there. She's actually going deaf, and she doesn't have any hearing aids, so she doesn't hear much that goes on. So she always appreciates people who come up and actually have a conversation with her afterwards. Really a dear sister, and then a bunch of the kids. They're all related in some way, I think. And I'm not going to have time to go through all of this, but this last picture is just of one in the inside of the hall in El Salvador. Now it so happens that this picture has Brother Jim up there, but he's not always up there. I'm going to take this opportunity to say a little bit of how things work, because maybe you're not familiar with it, but. But on a Sunday, they'll arrive first thing in the morning, and the memorial meeting happens first, and then everyone is there for that, and then they split off. The Sunday school happens while the public lecture is going on down below, or in a separate room. In this case, they have an upstairs to this building, so they split off to classes while the public lecture goes on, and the public lecture is a little more interactive than we're used to. Often there will be discussion and questions that go on during the presentation, and it seems to be quite effective, and most of the time. And they also have people in the audience do help to do the readings, and so it's quite participatory, and I think it works quite well. Now, I'm just going to have to keep going here. This slide is about Bible schools, and Gordon already showed a bunch of pictures about with mostly the Costa Rica Bible School, but I want to stress the importance of these schools because there isn't much opportunity for interaction between all of our brothers and sisters there. They're a little more isolated than we are. We if we wanted to, could pick an activity to go to every single weekend of the year in some ecclesia somewhere. And we could pick a series of Bible schools to go through the summer or the winter or a New Year's gathering or anything like that. But they have one opportunity during the year to meet together. And I think it's important to stress how precious this time is. I really appreciate it because it also gives me the opportunity to meet with people that I wouldn't otherwise see that even come from other countries like Guatemala and some of the brothers and sisters come from there to El Salvador. Now, I should have started this going. I won't say more than that. I guess in more recent years there's been more exchange between the countries, and some of that thanks to help from even our own ecclesia, helping them to be able to meet like that. There are two schools that go on in Central America, one in Costa Rica and the other one in El Salvador, and they alternate years, particularly when they send the young people from one country to the other one year and vice versa the next year. Now, this photo here is in a bus. I don't know if you can pick that out, but this year it dawned on me that there were a lot of people with cameras. And so that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people at the front of the bus taking pictures of everyone else, actually. That's a New Zealander. And it reminds me, on the day where they take pictures, and I'm actually not going to put up a photo of the whole group, but when it begins, everyone is assembled, and there are a couple of people taking pictures. And by the end, about half of the people are on one side with cameras taking photos of the other half. And it just strikes me as kind of funny. They all want a picture of their camera, but by the time they get over there to get it, they're missing half the people. So early in the morning, I think we meet at the hall at 7:30. And interestingly enough, this hall here, next door is, they make caskets. So I don't think I'm trying to say anything by that, but. And so you get on the bus and then that's the main hall at the camp. Some activities, soccer. Now, those guys are good at it. I didn't bother trying to compete with them. But I think he had the right idea. Take your net away, and then they can't score on you. And there's Brother Gordon right there. Discussion that goes on, and many a wonderful conversation there. They actually convinced me to play chess one day, and I thought, no, I'm not going to play. I haven't played for years, and I'm probably terrible, and I'm going to lose. So I kind of said no, but they insisted. And I played, and I guess something I'd learned from my Uncle Harold must have twigged, and I'd actually won the game. I was quite surprised, actually. And other activities that go on. This was a getting to know you one. And this one here, that's one you can see me on the end where I don't know if I've described it before as, you know, the two-legged race. Well, that's a multi-legged race. We're all tied together. And you think, how could that possibly work? Well, it did work until our team crashed into the next team. And I broke my rib, cracked my rib on that one. So then by the time I got to Costa Rica, and that's where this picture was taken, I was trying to play ping pong and doing it very robotically. So I wanted to show you a couple of pictures of the kids, the younger kids, and then there's this crafty thing going on. I actually, that's the year that I was running the crafts. Can you imagine me running crafts? I couldn't imagine it, and I was glad to have the help of some of the young people. This went on when during a time when they have a brother's class and a sister's class, and I think it's a really beneficial time that they've set aside at these Bible schools to focus on issues and deal with things that are specific to the brothers and specific to the sisters and have good discussion and about it. I was very thankful for my students. That's the group in Costa Rica that I had, and then the next one in El Salvador. A little bit younger, that group there. It was about 11, 12, 13, 14, and just the one lone male right there. And this group was a range from, I think, around 12 all the way up to 20-something. One of the things that I always pray for is that they actually get something useful and they take something home with them. And at the end of giving these kinds of classes, I kind of think, well, did I get through or not? And maybe some of you can identify with that. But so I prayed about it, and I asked, you know, can I have something that lets me know that it's really sinking in? And what I did is I put out a question box and set it up, and every day I'd say, you know, put your questions in there, whatever it is, let me know, and just put it in there anonymously, and I'll try and answer it for you. And so I didn't get anything the first couple of days. The next day I got a little happy face and actually a tiny little chocolate bar, which was half melted. So I had that as a snack. But the last day, right before the class, they had all got together, and I had three lined pieces of paper with signatures from each of them, and not just signatures, but a lengthy message from each one describing the impact that what I had taught them, what impact it had had on them. And if that wasn't an answer to prayer, I don't know what was, but it sure was a good feeling to know that they valued these things. And so I'd echo the comments of Gordon again on that. The a lot of work has been going into these young people, and it's so important because they face a lot of things in their lives. A lot of decisions. There have been some trying circumstances for them. And yet their values are, you know, they're putting the Word of God in the forefront. So I wanted to end it with food, because instead of a group fit picture, which you wouldn't be able to see all the faces anyway, this is everyone having a meal in Costa Rica at the Bible school there. Now, they were very generous, weren't they? You get these plates, and I had to tell them to just stop filling it up. It was really good food, but they really piled it on there. It was very generous. So much food. But more than that, it was spiritual food, and it was an opportunity for brothers and sisters of like precious faith. And we use that term, but I think we need to think about that's exactly what it means. It's a precious faith, and it is alike, and it does join us together and bind us. Where otherwise, we would just be we would never know of each other. I'm going to skip over this one. Gordon already showed you a map. I'm going to skip over that one too. Hey, does anyone remember this? I threw this slide in here because I'd done it when we were... as an interesting comparison for the, what was it, for the fundraiser. And I thought I'd throw this one in here because it compares the size of El Salvador, the size of Vancouver Island, the size of Costa Rica. Vancouver Island, 1.5 times the size of El Salvador. So they're all similar size, 1.6 times the size of Vancouver Island is Costa Rica. But both of these have, you know, 6 million and 4 million people. We have 0.7 million. And so I thought it was an interesting comparison, just to put it in perspective. You may remember that one. And then number of ecclesias. Now, let's see. What did I do here? I'm just going to show you a video. I think this is an important verse, though. I'm just going to read it out for you. Hebrews 13:15. Through Jesus, therefore, let us continually offer to God a sacrifice of praise, the fruit of lips that openly profess his name. And the question is, openly. Well, how open are we about our faith? And it's a question we have to answer personally. And it should be something we're open about because we believe it, and we want others to know that this is what we stand for. And what are we professing? Well, something we understand, so it implies an understanding. Now so that little glimpse of it, I wasn't going to play it quite yet. This is a presentation. So talking about taking the lessons to heart, they're pretty intense in this presentation. And maybe is this on? Yeah, it is. Oops. So at the basically the Sunday school year end happens at the Bible school. So all the classes do presentations. And it's kind of like our presentation night. Well, this one was on David and Goliath. So I've just got about a 1 minute clip. This is in El Salvador at the Bible school, yeah. So this is a 1 minute clip just of the fall of Goliath. And the lines are basically taken from scripture. So I haven't bothered to subtitle it for you. And I think you can understand what's going on. So here you go. Now, when he actually landed on his sword, which broke. So he can't cut it off his head with the sword, because he's laying on it. So he pulls it off. And then Israel attacks the Philistines. And you can hear everyone cheering in the background. And this poor guy, in the battle, fell. And he was actually hurt quite badly, but being true to his part, he stayed there until they were finished, and then went off to the side, and then cried. And that's Headless Goliath. After the presentation was over, actually, one of the favorite things for people to do was get their picture taken with Goliath, and he was pretty famous there. That was a brother, Manuel Fernandez, that was Goliath and had his head torn off. And so, I mean, on a bit of a serious note, we each of us have struggles in our lives and trials that develop our faith, which, of course, isn't foreign to us. Our brothers and sisters there struggle with trials as well. Some of them different, some of them the same. With sickness, with finances, with jobs. And without some of the benefits that we enjoy, like social services and good health care that's readily available. And yet, the hope that we have does find us and teach us that we don't have to fear for tomorrow and that we shouldn't be ashamed of the gospel. And Romans 1:16-17 says, "For I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God that brings salvation to everyone who believes, first to the Jew, then to the Gentile. For in the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed, a righteousness that is by faith from first to last, just as it is written, the righteous will live by faith." Now, I'm going to skip over this bit. You'll have to ask me about pupusas afterwards. It's getting late, but suffice it to say that the New Zealanders that visited that year actually got taught how to make them. And this is just in some restaurant. And they took them in. They were quite excited to teach them. But I'll tell you more about that if you want afterwards. So the last thing to close and ending on a bit of a light note. Oh, no, I can't remember which video this is. Ah, yes. Is one of working together. And so there are cabins at the Bible school. And there aren't quite enough for all the people that are there, so they have to rent tents as well, which have to be assembled. So I thought that this would be kind of a neat thing to show you.
Pardon me.
So that's about the end, all that we have time for tonight, actually, unfortunately. But hopefully it just helps you to kind of picture who our brothers and sisters are and identify a little bit with their daily lives. And be sure to come up to myself or Gordon afterwards, and we'll gladly answer any questions you have. Thanks, everyone.